Are you a parent or caregiver who also loves IBP books? Then we'd love to hear from you. Please go to the link in the show notes and fill out a quick survey to tell us more about your family habits and how IBP can serve you better. You'll be entered to win all the IBP books featured on this season of the podcast. Check the show notes for more information, and thank you for your input.
This episode is brought to you by IVP. What does faithful discipleship look like in the digital age? In his books, Analog Church and Analog Christian, author J.Y. Kim explores the ways in which technology affects our spiritual health and that of the local church. As a pastor in Silicon Valley, Kim grapples with digital impulses around us and offers practical wisdom on how to flourish as individuals and as Christian communities. And as a listener of this podcast, you can receive these books for 25% off when you use the promo code IVPOD25, that's IVPOD25, at ivypress.com.
This is IVP.
This current generation is one of, if not the loneliest generation. I think that that is largely in part to the messaging that they're receiving of kind of the false sense of friendships and connections that they had that aren't actually meaningful. We always say, like, let's look at your real, R-E-A-L, relationships versus your real, R-E-E-L. It appears you have 400 friends, right, online, but who of those people are you actually connecting with in real time? And I would really encourage parents to think about where they can increase those real person-to-person connections.
Welcome to Teach Your Children Well, a podcast on parenting in the way of Jesus. I'm Sarah Cowan-Johnson, and here we explore how the biblical story offers wisdom and good news for the 21st century parent. Today, we're going to talk about screens and technology. Whether you're trying to decide if you should hand your toddler an iPad while you cook, or whether you should let your kids on social media, all of us are making decisions about kids and tech that we have no reference points from our own childhood to draw from. This is why I'm thankful for two things. First of all, I'm thankful that James tells us that if any of us lacks wisdom, we should ask God who gives generously. Because more than clever tips and tricks and helpful hints, ultimately what we need here is wisdom. Technology is shaping not only how the world functions, but also how society is thinking about and reimagining the very things that make us human. In The Life We're Looking For, Andy Crouch puts it this way. He says, to be a person, to be human, is to be made for love. This is both the indelible fact of who we are and the great adventure of each of our lives. And he says this, he says, it is precisely this central task, becoming the relational beings we were meant to be, that is so desperately difficult in our technological, impersonal world. Helping our kids become the relational beings they're meant to be is one of the most important and most complex tasks of our time. It's much more art than science, and that means it's going to require a wisdom far greater than our own. So I'm thankful that James says we can ask God for wisdom. I'm also thankful for organizations like Screen Sanity, who are helping us to chart a course forward. Screen Sanity is an international nonprofit that equips parents to be mentors and guides, so that kids grow up happy and healthy in an increasingly digital world. I've long been a fan of their work and of their excellent resources for parents. And I'm thrilled to have Jamie Gordon as my guest today. Jamie Gordon is a licensed master's level social worker who oversees the social work program at Screen Sanity. Well, welcome, Jamie, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Really looking forward to our conversation. So I personally am a huge fan of Screen Sanity, but some of our listeners may be unfamiliar with your work. So I'm wondering if you could start off just by telling us about the mission of Screen Sanity and some of the specific things that you do as an organization.
Screen Sanity is now an international nonprofit, which is super exciting to share. So we're not only serving families here, you know, in the US, but we're growing and expanding. So that's amazing. But it was founded back in 2018 by two moms that were kind of hearing just a lot of like parents and people around them kind of talking about the tensions and struggles that they were experiencing in their families and around like tech use in their homes and not knowing really what to do or where to turn for guidance. And so they were kind of noticing, you know, this topic and thinking, gosh, we really don't have anywhere to turn. And that's kind of how Screen Sanity got started. And then our goal is to really just help families and communities pursue digital health in order to reduce loneliness, depression, anxiety, and suicide in a socially isolated society. So we serve to like provide trainings, tools, and tips to help families kind of maximize the benefits, the awesome things of technology, and then minimize those side effects.
It's awesome. It's so important. And speaking from personal experience, I can attest that your tools and tips and just all the free resources that we'll get into later have been so helpful and so thoughtful. So you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to hear that.
I would love for our listeners to hear a bit of your story personally. So could you tell us a little bit about how you became passionate about this topic?
Yeah, I'm a licensed social worker. I've been married for 17 years. I'm a mom of two boys and a girl. They're 14, 11, and 7. So I'm in the thick of things with the digital parenting, the way, you know, your listeners and you are. If I first got introduced to Screen Sanity, probably back before COVID, I actually attended a parent night at our church and my kids were younger then. I mean, our oldest was probably in third grade. So I really wasn't even to the point of like thinking about introducing like personal devices yet. And I was really happy to hear the information early on. So for your listeners that have little kids, like I would encourage them, it's not too early to hear this message, even if you think it's so far away. But then on the flip side, also, if you have older kids and you've already introduced devices, it's not too late. I mean, we'll get into more of that kind of as we get talking. But anyways, I attended and was just so blown away and would kind of meet with Tracy, our founder, here and there and kind of get updates on what was new with Screen Sanity. And as she was talking and sharing all the things of resources and trainings they were doing for parents, kind of my social work brain kind of clicked on and was like, okay, we need to get these resources out to kids that don't have actively involved parents, parents that don't have access to resources. Like, how can we get these things out to them as well? And so that's kind of how we then created our social work program, which is what I oversee. And so we provide like continuing education type trainings for social workers, counselors, therapists, so that they can then go and use some of our resources like in therapeutic settings as well. So that, and then I also am an intake coordinator at a law firm here in Kansas City where we provide legal representation pro bono for human trafficking victims. And so I just see such an overlap with the online world and the survivors that we serve. And so I once heard that your calling is where your talents and burdens combine. The call is what we do, but the burden is our why. And so I just feel like I've kind of always had this burden, like, so to speak, to just kind of educate parents and really protect kids in the online world. So that's just kind of how that's led me here.
Awesome. That's such a good story. And yeah, I do think God gives us these burdens that he, like, they're his burdens and he's sharing them with us. So that's beautiful. One of the things that we explore on this podcast is the messaging that parents and kids are picking up from the wider culture on any given topic. So let's start with parents. What is the water we swim in, so to speak, when it comes to tech and screens, especially messages we may not even realize we're absorbing?
So I think some messaging that parents are probably hearing in our culture is the phones can keep our kids safe, or even that we as parents need to be able to get a hold of our kids all the time, right? Which that's not how we grew up. You know, like if we had a problem, we had to wait till 3 o'clock for our mom or dad to pick us up and say, guess what happened at school today? And so I do think there's some like dependability there that's not only on the kids, but it's now parents thinking, well, I have to be able to get a hold of them, you know, all the time. And even though we hear kind of these different messages within culture, I think it's important to kind of share, like, or start by sharing some statistics that we do know to be true, because this is kind of how we kick off like our parent nights when we have groups of parents together, is we share these statistics and then we let parents sit at their table, kind of digest and talk about, oh my gosh, you know, this is what I just heard. And, you know, what do you think about all that? So if you're okay with that, I thought maybe
please.
I'd share a few.
Oh, please go ahead. I'd love it.
A couple of those statistics are only 14% of teens feel that they can talk with a trusted adult about technology.
Wow.
The average age of first pornography exposure is between ages 9 and 12.
Yes, I knew that one, and that's alarming. Especially
it is very alarming as a parent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
Technology is the number one battleground between parents and kids in home. 86% of today's youth say they want to be a social media influencer when they grow up, which is wild. Like, we wanted to be doctors or vets or teachers, and that's what 86% of our youth are saying today. And then 80% of teens report checking their phones through the night. So I think it's important for parents to have a grasp of like what the data actually is, when you're also thinking about the messaging that you're hearing.
Yeah. So that idea that we have to, our kids, we should have access to them at all times. I remember my child's middle school was trying to go phone free, and they eventually did. But when they first began talking about this, it wasn't the kids that were struggling with it. It was parents. And they actually had parents showing up in the office, like screaming at the administrators for even thinking about limiting their access to their kids during the day, which is wild just to think how far we've come with that expectation of being able to get a hold of our kids at all times. What about some of the messages that kids and teens themselves are picking up? How is technology shaping their understanding of themselves and the world around them?
I think that, you know, we know that this current generation is one of, if not the loneliest generation. And I think that that is largely in part to the messaging that they're receiving of kind of the false sense of friendships and connections that they have that aren't actually meaningful, you know? So we always say, like, let's look at your real R-E-A-L relationships versus your real R-E-E-L, you know? So what you, it appears you have 400 friends, right, online, but who of those people are you actually connecting with in real time? And this is an area that I would really encourage parents to think about where they can increase those real person-to-person connections. So even if you have a kiddo that their love is online gaming, okay, they play it with friends, maybe they play it with people they don't know, that's a separate topic. But if that's their true love or passion, can you invite the friend over? Can you say, hey, let's have Johnny over, and you guys can sit side by side, play the console, but it just, that connection is just happening more when you're in person and having a chance to have those conversations, you know, or even teaching your kids when they're commenting on, you know, social media things. They see that Sarah looks so pretty at prom. How much more would it mean to Sarah if you called her or you told her in person, Sarah, you looked so beautiful in your pictures? Right? Instead of just writing it on the comment and moving on to the next thing. So really like looking for those ways to have meaningful connection, you know, and we know that connection along with love and belonging is what gives purpose and meaning to our lives. And I think that's a place that is really kind of lacking with our youth at times because they just don't have those the way we do. You know, when we had problems, we show this great video in our parent night, but we show this video of a teen then and now not making the dance team. And so back then, what did she do? She came home, she got out her telephone, and she is processing, right? With her friends on the phone for hours and hours and hours. By the next day, she's good to go. What's happening now? Someone's posting a video online showing that they're getting rejected doing it. No one's really around to have the conversation. Maybe you send a text that says, oh, that stinks, you didn't make it. And they're just not processing and connecting the way we used to. So how can we really facilitate that, thinking about that and being mindful?
I mean, that really gets at what does it mean to be human? And part of what I would say as a follower of Jesus is we are designed for community, connection. We're designed as embodied people, and our bodies matter, you know, and when we kind of separate that embodied connection from our words, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, it has an impact. As you're talking about sort of real versus real, I just learned about this Snapchat solar systems, which is where if you're in someone's top 8 friends, so like you interact with these 8 people the most, it shows up on your profile or whatever it is. I'm not on Snapchat. As a little solar system, you can click on it and you can see where you rank in someone's solar system. Are you their Mercury, which is you're their closest, or are you their Pluto? So that is like, we are gamifying friendship, because if you interact with them more, you move up in their solar system. And we're like, putting a pecking order visibly in front of, you know, vulnerable teens. Anyway, I just could not believe this is what friendship looks like in the Snapchat world, right? Is a solar system. Anyway.
And we know how quickly those friendships change in adolescence, right? Yeah, if anyone has a middle schooler or a high schooler, that is changing daily. So, you know, what's happening and all that. So to have some sort of meter that's keeping track of that is just so sad.
And I read some tips about, you know, how to whatever it was, like, keep up your streaks with your friends, you know, in other words, like, stay in the app and keep messaging them, check frequently because your status changes all the time. You might be Venus today. And so, in other words, like, we know the app developers are adding this feature to get kids to participate more in the app, which is the other dark side of socials. If it's free, you are the product being sold.
Exactly.
Anyway, so we could talk about that forever. But yeah, what I hear you saying is some of the messaging that kids are picking up really is redefining what friendship is, redefining what social interactivity is, redefining what's healthy. And yeah, that. So what's the impact of these messages about kind of constant availability, instant friendship, all these things? What's the impact of these messages on our families over time? What happens if we don't help our families to swim upstream in this area?
And it definitely is a swim upstream situation. I mean, it is hard, and it is so worth it if you can muster the energy to do it. And I know the energy it takes. Like I said, I'm a parent myself. I know it's hard to go against the grain, and it's a lot. So for me, you know, I feel like the more conversation you can have with your kids around your why is helpful. So not just like, you can only have this much screen time, or I'm not going to get you a device till this age, but explaining to them the science and the reasoning behind the why. So I think my older kids, I think they appreciate and understand it more. The amount of dopamine our kids are experiencing on a daily level because of the access and immediate gratification at their fingertips is insane. And so if we don't make changes, that has a long-term impact. So for those who aren't familiar with dopamine, it's a neurotransmitter in our brain that is responsible for feeling pleasure and reward. So every time our kids are picking up their phones or tablets, they're getting kind of this immediate pleasure hit, right? And what we know is that the more and more they do this, the amount they need to feel that same amount of pleasure increases. So like what they were doing before is no longer enough. So like if I used to feel happy, you know, checking my Instagram every 2 hours or something, over time, that's going to start being every hour or every 30 minutes or, you know, whatever to get me to get more of that happy feeling. And so this is physically changing the way our brain is firing. And I think it's important for kids to understand that, you know, at an age appropriate level, depending on how old your kiddo is and when you're talking about this. And the scary part of that is that the same part of our brain that balances that pleasure side also balances pain. So when one side tips too much, the brain tries to balance itself out. So when we receive too much dopamine, our brain will try and like restore the balance by activating that pain side. So that's why sometimes after like feelings of pleasure, it can feel like kind of a hangover or coming down. And I think this is why we see so much emotional dysregulation in kids right now, because they are constantly in this cycle that can't be broken, whether it's intentional or not. You know, even in schools, we talk a lot with teachers or staff that they just, maybe they're doing something on the computer or the iPad and they're having trouble with kids transitioning off to then go to the next thing. And so they see these outbursts and these meltdowns. And, you know, our kids are just in these states all day, whether we're meaning for them to be or not, just the way devices are used, you know. And so you have to be mindful of that and being aware of kind of explaining that to your kids in a way that makes sense to them.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, what you're describing, it certainly sounds like addiction, right? That
exactly.
You need more. I mean, you're describing that. We all throw around the term screen addiction. You know, I'm addicted to my phone, but you're saying even physiologically what's happening in our body really mirrors that addiction withdrawal, you know, high withdrawal pattern. That's wild.
And that is one way I explain it to my kids, which is probably a little bit extreme, maybe, but I do tell them, you know, the same way you can get addicted to a drug, you need more of it to feel the same. It's the same with our screens, but also going back to what you're saying, if you can really understand that that's the point, that's what the developers are doing, it kind of takes a little bit of that shame piece out too, if that makes sense. Our kids don't have to feel ashamed when they're understanding, listen, it is someone's sole job to see how many times you can pick up your phone today and play Block Blast. And so being able to really understand that, I think, is helpful. And then another kind of like long-term impact, if we don't kind of think about tech use or boundaries or where they're using, is thinking about like our relationship with tech use and mental health and thinking about where our kids and even ourselves are putting our phones at night. So that's one of our like biggest tips in screen sanity is if you can just even not have the phones in your room when you're sleeping, that is a huge benefit. Statistics are telling us that kids are checking their phone 80% of the time. We know they're not getting good sleep, right? We know that quality sleep reduces anxiety and depression. And we also know that kids' decision-making and their impulse control skills are lowered at night when they're tired. So even being able to protect them from making a poor choice. You know, maybe they send a text or a photo in the middle of the night or later at night that they wouldn't have sent during the day. And so being able to kind of protect them in that way or giving them a chance to recharge and not have that accessibility all the time. I always tell my kids, blame it on me. You can say my mom's strict. She makes me put my phone away at 10:30. I'll get back to you in the morning as soon as I can. Blame it on me. But we just know how important sleep is. And I think that's another kind of long-term effect and thing that we're seeing with kiddos right now is they're not sleeping as good as they should be because of the devices.
That's right. That's so good. Yeah. So having the phone outside the bedroom, we have screen limits. So the phone, he can't access anything other than emergency after 10 o'clock at night. That's for a high schooler. And the other thing that I know I shared this with a friend recently who didn't know about this, but you know, the night shift function on most phones that turns the blue light off, you can set that to turn off, put that filter on in the evening, because even that blue light before bed, right? Even if you turn your phone off and put it away at 10 o'clock, if you've been ingesting all that blue light for 2 hours, that's going to mess your hormones up, the sleep hormones yep. you need. So that's great. Good tip. So yeah, if we don't help our families to swim upstream, it's not just social consequences or whatever. You're saying there's some real physical consequences that we're starting to see. And that's a little frightening.
So I know, not to come on and be Debbie Downer here.
I know. We're going to get to some helpful tips and good news. And yes. So hang in there, friends. We're all in the same boat.
Today's digital technologies are designed to captivate our attention, and they encroach on our boundaries, shaping how we relate to ourselves, others, and even to God. Sociologist Felicia Wu Song has spent years considering the personal and collective dynamics of digital ecosystems. In her book, Restless Devices, Song combines research-based insights with theological reflections to understand the ways in which personal technologies are forming us, as well as pathways we can use to resist and opt for healthier lifestyles. Stay tuned until the end of the episode to find out how you can get a special discount on Restless Devices at ivypress.com.
So I know that Screen Sanity isn't a faith-based organization, but you've shared with our team that you yourself are a follower of Jesus. I'm wondering, would you tell us a bit about how your Christian worldview shapes your approach to tech in your home? How does your faith influence this conversation?
I am personally a Christian, yes, and involve our faith in a lot of the ways that we make decisions for our family. We try to keep it simple with them, you know, and that as Christians, we're called to love God and love people, okay? It's that simple. And so keeping this simple phrase in mind, how do we represent that in our real lives and in our online lives? So the way we're speaking to people in person or online, or what are we commenting on? What are we looking at online? You know, do those things represent loving God and loving people? And so just really trying to teach them this framework in life, you know, to use in their relationship with peers and friends, but also what you're portraying online. So kind of two favorite verses that, you know, we try to share with our kids is Romans 12:2, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. And then our other kind of favorite one is 1 John 2:15, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. So really just reminding our kids, you know, are you loving social media and your phone and games and those things more than God? Those are things of the world, right? Those are not things of eternity. Keep it simple and age appropriate for all of them.
Yeah. And I think what I love about that is that you're fitting then technology and so how we behave online into a bigger framework. And it's not just here are the rules that go with your phone, which I'm sure we also have rules, but you're helping them to see that good stewardship of their online world is part of a bigger framework for their whole life. So it's not just that mom has these arbitrary rules for the phone. It's that no, our family, we love God and we love people. And that translates into everything we do, including how we use our tech. So I like that a lot. That's really good.
And one little resource that we have, it's not religious, but it's called My Social Media Playbook. And it's awesome for people that are either already have social media or you're introducing it. And it's just a quick little booklet that they could do on their own or do with a parent or do in a group, whatever you want to do. But it's kind of the same type of framework. I mean, minus the Christianity piece, but it's getting you to think about what are my values? What are important to me? How am I going to portray this online? You know, getting yourself to really be mindful of what you're putting out there. And so that's a great resource that just asks the questions and kids have to think about it and fill it out. And it doesn't have to be mom or dad saying, what do you value? And you're like, what are you talking about? You know, so that's a good thing that is on our website too. If parents are interested in having their kids do it, you know, by themselves or with friends or in a group or whatever.
Yeah, I've seen that and I love it. And one of the things I've always been impressed with your resources in particular is that why piece is on all of your playbooks and guides. I feel like really emphasize the why, which I think aligns really well with a life of faith because we're people who are motivated by a really clear why. Just have always seen, oh, these resources speak to a sense of purpose and vision that I find really aligns with a life of faith. So what would you highlight, again, speaking for yourself personally, what would you highlight as some of the key differences between a biblical worldview and then the secular worldview, some of that messaging we were talking about earlier?
I think the secular world is kind of in this need and want for instant gratification and kind of a do what you want or do what you need right now to feel good, right? Like kind of a you do you mentality, which is obviously very different framework than kind of what we're called to follow as Christians. And I wrote down a verse for this too of Luke 9:23. If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake, we'll save it. So, you know, we're expected to deny some of these desires, right? And we're supposed to take up our cross. And that is a very different shift than what we see in the secular world.
So in your work with Screen Sanity and in your work with families, what are some of the most common concerns that parents are wrestling with right now? So are there any fears that come up a lot in your work that you feel like our listeners could relate to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like a lot of the things we hear a lot are, you know, how much screen time is appropriate? When should I give my kid a device? That's the answer that I love about Screen Sanity too. We are not anti-tech. There are so many amazing things technology can do that betters our lives, right? So let's focus on those things and then, you know, try to help minimize those side effects. And so every family's different. Every kid's different. Even in your own family. I mean, my own children, my 14-year-old is a different breed than my 7-year-old. So their roadmap of what their tech life looks like is probably going to be different. And that's okay. And so there's not a one size fits all. And so that's what I love about Screen Sanity is we just try to offer so many different like tips and tools and find what works for you. You don't even have to do them all. You know, it doesn't have to be, I'm doing every single tip that Jamie said starting tomorrow and the whole family's going, wait, what? We've never done any of this, you know? So even if you can just kind of find a place to start. And I also feel like that's another thing that parents will say, well, I already gave the device. Is it too late? You know, what do we do about that? How do we reframe what tech life looks like in our house? Those are kind of the biggest things that people come to us with. Obviously more serious issues too of, you know, my child's seen pornography. What do I do now? How do I talk to my kids about sexting, pornography, all the things that are really hard conversations sometimes? I mean, I'm trying to just kind of give a general bubble of what we hear from kind of most frequently.
Before we gave my son a phone, and his first phone was not, it was a Trumi phone. It was not a full smartphone. He didn't have internet, didn't have socials. He still doesn't, but I made him do this sort of driver's ed thing where I had him learn. I sort of made this thing myself, but I had him learn about sexting and all these things that he's not even going to be able to do with this device, but we're going to start talking about this stuff now so that as we up his device and his permissions over time, these are not brand new concepts because, yeah, I feel like this is the world we're in. So
that's the number one thing. Like, if you can't do anything else, if you say it feels too hard to take phones away at bedtime or it feels too hard to not have devices at dinner, you know, any of these things that we've come up with, or, you know, I don't know how to put a router level filter, you know, things that are just like, that's too much. If you can't do any of those things, the best thing you can do is conversation, like you're saying, because when those situations arise, then your kiddo knows, oh, one, my mom's already told me about this, or dad or grandparent or whoever. But two, they've also had this hard conversation with me. So I know I can go to them without shame and they can handle what I'm going to say. You have to practice your I'm not shocked face so that when your kid comes to you and is like, someone just sent me a picture of beep, you know, and you're like, you can't do that, right? Because then they're going to say, okay, my mom could not handle what I just said. So how do we practice the thank you so much for coming and telling and sharing that with me, you know, and having that conversation. And then later you have your freak out in the closet, right? You're like, oh my gosh, I got to call my best friend and tell him that this just happened. I don't know what to do, you know, but that just takes away that shame piece and making your kids feel like they can be vulnerable and come to you and you can handle it because these things will happen.
Right. And they're not, I think, a PS to that, like in our family, you're not going to get in trouble for bringing something like that to us. You know, it's really clear if you, even if you like made a mistake with your phone and you need to talk about it, revealing it to us, you're not going to get anger. You might right. have a consequence and we have a whole contract, but you're going to get a reaction of like, thank you for telling me and let's talk. And I think kids need to have that expectation or they won't talk.
Yeah. And that's where you see like 86% don't have a trusted adult that's talked to them. So that's
right,
where we
right,
all have to do
huge.
Better as adults.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, we have to have the hard conversations, even though it is hard.
It is hard. Yeah. Well, so speaking of sort of different ages and tips, I'm wondering if you could give us just one, and I know it will be hard to narrow down, but one
yeah.
quick tip based on each age group. So I'll give you we'll start with toddlers and preschoolers. What's one tip for parents?
Well, it's interesting that you said a driver's ed because this is kind of a broader answer to all the age groups, but that is kind of our model at Screen Sanity is like a driver's ed, like a ride practice drive. So in those younger ages of toddlers, preschool, and elementary school, what they're doing is they're riding along, right? They are watching how mom and dad are using tech. What does that look like? Maybe you're teaching them, oh, right now I'm ordering groceries on my phone. You know, the same way you'd say, oh, at a red light, I stop. You know, they're just kind of watching. Then you kind of get to those more middle ages. And again, it's different for everybody. And that's going to be more that practice model. So maybe we're introducing a device. Maybe it's a watch. Maybe it's an iPad. Maybe it's a dumbed down phone, whatever it is. And that's when you're walking alongside them. So you're saying, you know, this is my device still, but we're going to learn together. You're going through things with them that come up, teaching like that. And then as they get older or they show that readiness, that's when you're giving them the keys to the car, right? You're giving them their own device. And I think that's a really easy way for parents to think about it, because you would not give your 14, 15, 16-year-old keys to the car and go, you did take Interstate 435 to this, to that, and you let them on their way. And it's the same with devices. You know, if you can look at it as a ride, practice, drive model on their roadmap to getting technology, I just think it's a helpful way for parents to think about. So that's not necessarily like a tip per age, but thinking about what you can be doing during those ages and stages.
Right. It's a general philosophy. I really love that. And I think something that I have talked with parents a bunch about is I think we have these dual instincts of protecting our kids and then also preparing our kids for launching them into the world. And I think sometimes we lean one way or the other, right? So I probably tend to lean a little more prepare, get them out there, you know, like where some people tend to lean a little more protect. And I think we can, if we overprotect, so if we only ever had them ride and practice and, but not drive till they're in college, right? Like,
right.
They actually don't learn enough under our roof. And I think there's some ways that we have to give them the keys. Like, for example, our high schooler doesn't have socials yet, but we will allow him on socials when he's 16. And that specifically is for that, so that he has a couple years to drive before we launch him out into the world on his own.
Yep. And I don't know, have you read The Anxious Generation?
Oh my gosh, I'm such a fangirl. Yes.
It's an amazing book. And I don't want to talk about it too much, but the big driving force in all of it that I have tried to reframe in my mind as a parent that I think is helpful for people too, if they haven't read the book, is he talks about how we overprotect in the real world and underprotect in the online world. And so for myself, I have tried to think, where can I give my kids more responsibility or freedom, independence in the real world? Can they go ride their bikes around the neighborhood or wherever and not get kidnapped? Probably, most likely, right? But what are the chances if they online game with a stranger? That's way higher. You know, and so really thinking about that too, because I do think kids, especially when you're hitting that middle school, high school age, they want freedom and independence because that's how they grow, right? And they feel safe in our world and they develop skills. And so it can't just be no, 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 no all the time. So where can we give more of that independence kind of in that real world and then still, you know, be walking alongside them with some protection in the online world?
So I remember when, before our kids had any kind of devices, we would let them trick or treat in the neighborhood by themselves. But that was very controversial. And, you know, I'm thinking actually handing them a phone that they're going to be looking at while they cross the street, that's actually less safe. Cars are the number one danger on Halloween, not kidnappers. So anyway, that's a whole side topic. Jamie, for the parent right now who's listening and feeling like overwhelmed or anxious or maybe ashamed of where things are in their own family, what would you say to them? Could you just speak to that parent who's like, oh my gosh, there's no way I can get this under control?
Well, it's hard and I get it. And we only know what we know, right? And sometimes we think something's going to go a certain way and it doesn't. So if you gave a device and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, this was not a good idea. You know, we're having that battleground. We're having a lot of issues. Like, that's okay too. You know, there's no shame in trying something. And if it didn't work, reframing it, right? Doesn't mean you have to immediately take it away or anything like that, but just looking at ways to do things differently. I like to personally like put it back on myself kind of as a parent and say, you know, Hey, bud, I've noticed like I have been on my phone so much during dinner, and I think I have really missed out on time with you guys. What would you guys think about if we just all put our devices like over on that back counter one night a week when we have dinner? You know, so that it's not like a consequence, but like also coming to them with your own vulnerability. Or, hey, I'm noticing I am getting notifications through the night and I wake up and check. Do you notice you ever do that? We should try one night of not doing that, you know, and putting the devices somewhere else or whatever. But so coming up with ways kind of on yourself to be vulnerable. And I think what people will be surprised is it might be hard at first and you might get some pushback. But if you stick with it, I think you'll start to notice your kids like it and they crave it and they hold you accountable for it. So even if dinner is like Chick-fil-A in the car, I mean, truly, this does not have to be I'm cooking an organic meal and we're all sitting down, the five of us. Like, I know that is rare. You know, I could be driving one to baseball and saying, you know what? I noticed we're like on our phones and we should be talking. Let's put our phone in the front seat and talk while we eat our Chick-fil-A and drive to baseball. I mean, it doesn't have to be whatever, but I feel like kids actually really want that and crave that. And so once they get it, they appreciate it more. You know, I notice my own kids holding their siblings accountable. So like if I'm cooking dinner and someone's on an iPad and we're done and we're about to eat, one is telling the other, hey, no devices at dinner, because they like it. They like that. I guess another thing too is we like to think about screen time in three buckets. So create, connect, and consume. Create is like the cool apps where we're like making like a Minecraft world and, you know, we're kind of using our brains, right? Connect is, are we texting with friends? Are we FaceTiming? Those types of things. And then consume is the one that we want to like lower the amount spent there. Am I just swiping up on this? Am I on the next reel on TikTok? Things that are just mindless and not really helpful. So, you know, thinking about too, are there places that we can decrease in the consume bucket, but still be using our devices for the amazing things that they are designed to do too?
I really like that. Yeah, that's a great framework. In each episode, we invite our guests to respond to a parenting question. Here's today's question for you.
How would you respond to a parent who is committed to not giving their kid a smartphone until high school, but is also concerned about how their kid would react? Feeling left out is already a big concern for many middle schoolers, and not having a phone could only increase those feelings. Is there value to consider the effect on a child's social life, or is it better to stick to the original commitment no matter what?
Oh, that's a hard question. And you know what? I have a middle schooler that's in eighth grade and he just got his phone this year at Christmas. And so he went most of middle school without a phone. So I know that it's hard. And I know also what it's like to feel like, gosh, everyone else has one. So I want to, you know, empathize and relate there. Of course, you never want to sabotage or intentionally, you know, hurt their social lives. And so I can understand that. I think the awesome thing about one of the resources we have on Screen Sanity is that kind of first phone comparison chart. And so if you're not ready to do a smartphone yet, but the sole purpose is connection, like, are there other devices we could introduce before that? You know, like, my kiddo, for example, he had an Apple Watch in sixth grade. That's what we gave him, one that had a cellular service or whatever so that he could text or call if he needed to. But the screen on the Apple Watch is this big. So you're not sitting and like scrolling Safari. You're not going to be on other things. So it was truly solely to do that. And our younger kiddo has had a Gizmo watch as well where, you know, that's a little more controlled. So I guess my recommendation would be is, can you find other ways to get them connected? Are there other devices that they can use? Is there a family phone? Is there a family iPad that they could use even with, you know, just like iChat, but it's just not on them all the time or things like that? Or just, are there other ways to get them together with these people in person? Like we talked about the importance of the connection, or I even would have some of my kiddos' friends text my phone. Hey, is Max available? Sure, you know, and then I'd let him do it, but it still wasn't the piece of him having that on him all the time, you know, that I wasn't ready to like introduce yet. So I get that it's hard. There are a lot of other amazing devices out now that aren't just the Apple phone if you don't want to go to that, but still want to introduce something. And then again, just looking for those in-person connections would be, you know, my biggest encouragement.
That's so helpful. Thinking upstream, especially parents with littler kids, I would say to start rallying other parents to have a community that might stick it out with you. So again, to this particular question, yeah, your friendships have maybe already formed and maybe all those friends have phones. But I will say that with our oldest child, he was the only one he knew who didn't have a phone. But with our younger son, he knows a lot more kids whose parents have very similar thoughts to us. And that's going to make a huge difference. So
that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
And every kiddo is different. You know, everyone is different. And every family, there's no judgment for the ones that have given or haven't. But I do think more research is coming out that people are starting to think about it a little more waiting than maybe they even did 5-7 years ago, you know, when it was just the natural thing to go, oh, great, I need to get a hold of you. Here's your iPhone. You know, and more people are thinking about it and educating themselves on it. You're seeing schools come out and say, we're not even going to allow cell phones in school. So what do you need this for? You know, so hopefully it'll keep trending in that way, too.
Yeah, let's hope. So lastly, could you just tell us, you've shared a few things already, some of the playbooks and, you know, some of the other resources, but could you tell us a little bit more about what parents can find on your website or what are some of the resources available?
We have a ton of different resources, like you said, on screensanity.org. We have several different kind of books, if you will, but it's not really like a reading book. It'd be more like a workbook. So we have a Screen Sanity kind of 6-week study if you wanted to like break it down into weeks that way with a group of people. We have the social media playbook that I talked about. We also have 3 different ages for, they're called a plugged-in planner. And that kind of goes back to what you're asking about those different ages. We have a preschool, an elementary, and a middle school age one. And it just kind of, each book is specific to like the challenges you're going to see with those specific age groups and kind of tips and tricks for navigating that. We also have a ton of like free resources that you can just print off to, self-guides to different apps that you're hearing about. We have a babysitter's guide, like if you want to leave out kind of a piece of paper with when the babysitter comes of kind of what the tech rules are when other people are watching your children. We have stuff about gaming. I mean, we didn't even really get into any of that. So there's just a ton of stuff on there that's super helpful. I also love the My First Phone comparison chart. It breaks down like several different products, what each one has. So that's a good way for parents to say, gosh, if I'm only needing a phone call and a text, I can just get this phone. I don't need to get, you know, the iPhone or whatever. And so I think that's a really helpful place for parents to start too when they're thinking about introducing devices. And then when you talked about community, that is really what Screen Sanity was founded on, is our parent nights and getting groups of parents together. Because like you said, that's where systematic change happens. The more people that are saying, okay, you're going to wait. Okay, I'll wait. Like this is going to make it easy for Sam and, you know, whatever. And so we have that kind of all bundled into one kit on our website that like PTOs will purchase a lot. You can do it through church, whatever you want. And it all comes already together and it's literally press play. So you just need one person who's willing to facilitate. You don't need to be an expert. We come with, here's what you do. And it's a great way to kind of introduce all of our stuff to a lot of people at one time.
So great. Yeah, I think I have downloaded everything that's free. and then I purchased a bunch too. I have all the playbooks. But yeah, I can't say enough good things about these resources. And I was so excited that you were willing to join me for a conversation
because
always been a fan. I just think you guys are doing such good work to equip parents and, you know, help us to think about it again, not just from just sort of like, not just from the yes and no rule thing, but the why, and then really helping us to engage our kids thoughtfully in the conversation. So yeah, check out screensanity.org. Thanks so much for joining me, Jamie.
And yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah. I'd love to just pray to close us, pray for our listeners. So Lord God, thanks for Jamie and for the work of Screen Sanity. We just thank you for the wisdom that you offer us when we are in need of it. And Lord, this is an area in our parenting where many of us feel overwhelmed, feel like we don't know exactly what to do. We don't have those parents to call the way we do for other things. And so, Father, would you give us wisdom? Would you give us creativity? Would you give us a sense of adventure as we parent our kids through uncharted territory? And so, Lord, would you show us just the simple changes, simple baby steps that you're inviting us to? And so we just ask for your presence with us. We want to seek to reflect your image in the real world and in the online world, and to help our kids to do that well. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
And now it's time for Steal This Idea, a simple, practical way to take today's conversation and live it out at home. Try it, tweak it, make it your own. The goal isn't to replicate exactly what I do with my family, but to practice the beautifully distinct and compelling way of Jesus with yours. Today's idea actually combines two ancient practices used by the early church to combat the sin of gluttony. Now, gluttony is typically about food. And obviously, food is good, and it's even necessary for survival. But gluttony is a distortion or a warping of the relationship that God intended us to have with food. So it's not that food is the problem. It's our consumption, our use of food that's problematic. And so it's really fascinating when we apply the idea of gluttony to technology. Because is the problem technology itself? No, it's our consumption of it. The problem is that we consume too much. We binge, we don't exercise self-control, and we become addicted. Another problem is that we consume technology not for nourishment, but simply to indulge our appetites, to soothe ourselves in different ways. So we could think of this type of consumption of technology as gluttonous. So what practices did the early church recommend to combat gluttony? Well, there were two. The first was fasting. Now, fasting, again, typically applies to food, but let's apply it to technology. All the disciplines of abstinence, fasting, solitude, silence, they're all about stripping things away to reveal what's really underneath, our hidden motivations, our hidden drives, our compulsions, our sin. And so when we fast from technology, we begin to realize, wow, what's driving me to look at my phone every 10 seconds? What's that about? What am I craving? What am I anxious about? How is this thing controlling me? Fasting is a way to resist being controlled by or subject to anything other than the Holy Spirit. With technology, fasting could look like this. And this, I would say, is an addition to sort of general common sense boundaries like no phones at the dinner table or no phones in bedrooms. So here are some ideas for technology fasts. Maybe a family screen Sabbath once a week, a full day or even part of a day that's intentionally tech-free. Maybe it could look like no screens for entertainment while on vacation, board games and cards and evening walks only. Or maybe it could look like everyone leaving their phones in the car when you go out to eat or at home when you go for a walk. So fasting to combat gluttony probably makes sense. But that's only half the picture, because the other practice recommended by the early church fathers to combat gluttony was feasting. Feasting is the ancient Christian tradition of celebrating with food, drink, and friends, consciously in the Lord's presence. Christopher Walk says this. He says, "Fasting fights gluttony as one abstains from food and drink. Feasting, meanwhile, also aids in curing gluttony in a way that fasting cannot. Instead of ordering the desire for food by abstaining from it, feasting orders the desire for food by one's learning to use it well." Learning to use it well is the key. When we feast on technology, we use it to connect rather than to isolate, to create rather than to consume. We bring it into the light. We make it relational. So for example, a movie night with the whole family, a silly reel that you make with your teen, a playlist that you build together, FaceTime with grandparents. These moments can become sacred celebrations when done consciously in the Lord's presence, in love, and with limits. Here are three main differences between gluttony and feasting, in case this is confusing. Gluttony is mindless, just like picking up my phone and scrolling through Instagram. Feasting is thoughtful, collecting a series of funny videos that I want to show my sons later. Gluttony is individual, just by myself in my bed consuming a show. Feasting is communal, family movie night, sacred Friday night ritual in our home. Gluttony is carnal. We're only aware of our desire and pleasure. where feasting is sacred, we are also aware of God's presence with us. So I encourage you to take some time to think through how to weave both fasting and feasting into your family's tech habits. I've personally found this to be a helpful framework for all ages, from toddlers to teenagers. So I hope you'll give it a try. The Teach Your Children Well podcast is a production of InterVarsity Press. For more information on any IVP titles mentioned in this episode, visit ivpress.com and use code IVPTEACH25. That's IVPTEACH25 for 25% off and free U.S. shipping. Sound engineering by Honest Podcasts. Our producers are Helen Lee, Caitlin Borick, and Travis Albritton. I'm your host, Sarah Cowan Johnson. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the IVP YouTube channel, and leave a rating and review to support the show.